Dear Cheap Astronomy, what do you make of the helical drive? Well, not much. But in this case, the author of the idea deserves credit for acknowledging it might be up there with the EM drive and cold fusion. He just thought it was an idea worth putting out there for review. Various journalists have picked up the story by claiming the helical drive violates the laws of physics, which is certainly not the case. It would only violate the laws of physics if it worked. The basic problem you're up against in flying through empty space is that there's nothing to grab onto. You can drive a car on Earth, and indeed drive a solar car on Earth, without carrying fuel or propellant, because you're essentially pulling yourself along the surface of the road, using energy to rotate your wheels. You can do much the same in an electric plane, which has no fuel or propellant, it just pulls itself through the atmosphere. But, in empty space, there's nothing to grab onto to pull yourself along, so your only option is to throw something out the back, so that Newton's third law, the one about actions and opposite reactions, works to push you forward. Nonetheless, the idea of a space engine that doesn't need propellant is compelling, since it would greatly reduce the mass you have to fly. So it is always worth at least thinking about new ways forward. Small astronomy joke there. The idea behind the helical drive is to move mass around in your spacecraft. The helical drive is basically a particle accelerator, which moves small charged particles around a track that's shaped like a helix, where the particles move slower in one part of the accelerator than in another part. And if there's particles that always move faster on one side than on the other, and they're moving really fast, like 0.999% of the speed of light fast, then their increased relativistic mass at the higher speed should generate more momentum in one direction than the other. But no, it doesn't work. It might sound like it would work if you just consider two separate states of inertia. But to make one state of inertia where the particles move fast, and another state of inertia where the particles don't move as fast, the particles will have to be accelerated at one point, and then decelerated at another point, to get you the speed difference, and hence the relativistic mass difference. So there has to be a period over which you're accelerating a non-relativistic mass, and then decelerating a relativistic mass. So in the end, the balance of forces and the relativistic and non-relativistic momentums all just balance out to give you a net effect of zero. It's implied in the helical drive design that the geometry of the path of the accelerated particles is what ensures that all the speeding up and slowing down operate to create momentum in one preferential direction, but that doesn't really make sense. At the end of the day, all the pushing and the pulling is between the spacecraft and those inner moving particles, so the geometry of the vectors involved doesn't really matter. You could achieve something like the effect of a reaction wheel, which can change the attitude of a spacecraft, turning it upside down, say, but you can't push and pull against your own spacecraft to change its direction or its speed through a vacuum. And if all you want to do is to turn your spacecraft upside down, why not just put some reaction wheels on board, which are existing technology, whereas a space-going helical-shaped particle accelerator is not. So from our cheap analysis of the situation, the person who proposed this idea thought there was something useful in the relativistic mass gained from accelerating particles up to the speed of light, but they perhaps hadn't considered all the pre and post steps involved in achieving and sustaining that state. There is some similarity between the helical drive idea and one of the so-called Mach effects, specifically the Woodward effect. There are different underlying mechanisms, but the Woodward effect and the helical drive both rely on arguments about relativistic physics operating in specific states of inertia, while the critics of those arguments point out that once you add in the effects of the acceleration and subsequent deceleration needed to enter and depart those states of inertia, the net effect is zero. That sounds about right to us.